All right. Welcome back, ladies. We are here in week 4 of Stressless Cooking. I'm just going to go ahead and share my screen and we're going to go ahead and dive on in. So excited to bring you this 4th installment of our program here. And this week we are going to be talking about your big fat experiment, like how to actually bring all of this together and become a stressless cook. Okay. And so before we dive in, before I just turn this over to my amazing pilot over here, Laura Lee, I just want to do a quick little recap because honestly, you've done all of the hard work up until now, like all of the things that we've been talking about, getting you in the mindset, figuring out your cooking personality, really doing that cooking audit, all of those things, the 5 shifts that we talked about back in week 1. We really are setting you up for success so that your big fat experiment is actually a breeze. So I know it feels like, oh, wow, the actual cooking part, that's the hard part of it. No, we've set it up so that this is actually the easiest part for you. So quick recap, okay? We talked about last week this idea, and you know, we talked about it a lot in stressless eating, is like, why experimentation? Well, the truth is that you're not a widget. You cannot use a cookie cutter plan, a do this, don't do that. You've got to find what works for you so that it does actually work for you in the long run. This is a forever conversation. Remember that. And you know, the do this, don't do that approach, it won't ever tell you what your right solution is. Because the truth is if you knew the right solution for you when it comes to being the version of you that you want to be in the kitchen and around, you know, the preparation of food, you'd already be doing it now. And we need to find out what that looks like for you because you don't already know, okay? And the only way to do that is through experimentation. And again, just reminding you that experimentation is pretty much the opposite of perfectionism, right? And so when it comes to having this experiment mentality, it's really like finding the ingredients. We're talking literally and metaphorically here to your magic formula. How you do it is going to be different than how I do it and then how Laura Lee does it. We're trying to find what's relevant for you. And this is the one that's going to you'll do the best results. And of course, we're measuring results as in like, do you actually do it? Does it make you feel good? Are you feeling good before, during, and after all that? While still experiencing like the joy in your life and not feeling like you're uprooting your life. And so this time we want you to fill in all the ingredients using what you already know about your life, what you like, what you don't, what works, what doesn't. And that's really how that cooking personality element that we introduced you to last week really comes into play, getting to know thyself. Okay. And you know, the real life that you're trying to create, it's not a product of this, you know, cookie cutter, one size fits all assembly line, where, you know, you're just like everyone else. That's not real life, you know? And so we want to make sure that you are becoming the mad scientist that you already are, and you're discovering what does and doesn't work for you in your own real world, real life laboratory / kitchen, okay? And so we talked about last week that, you know, step one was this idea of like, let's get a baseline. Let's figure out where you are, what feels good, what doesn't. And so we invited you to use the stressless cooking audit and take 7 days, and honestly, you could get these awarenesses in less, but you know, give yourself a good 7 days and use the audit and figure out like what you're currently cooking or concocting and how it's making you feel. And we just made it very simple, giving you emojis to use to rate yourself. And so what you're gonna do is just, if you haven't done this already, you just wanna write down and keep track of what you're eating and what you're cooking and how it made you feel. Did it make you feel good? Did it make you feel bad? Was it kind of neutral? And then at the end of 1 week, we want you to just kind of highlight the things that made you feel anywhere from good to amazing, and then just make a list of those things, okay? And that is the first step of awarenesses, okay? Step two was determining your cooking personality. We talked about how you might be all or some of these at any given moment in time, and it's going to shift based on where you are in that moment in time in your life, or maybe what season you're in your life, right? If you have a busy work season, you might be a convenience big batch person, right? But if you're like kind of just like it's slow summertime, whatever it is, you might be in the artist Taco Tuesday mindset, right? But the important thing is realizing where you are and also where you are not, and not trying to fit yourself into a mold that doesn't reflect what you need in that moment in time. Again, this is all about how you're feeling and enjoying the experience of who you're being while you go, but setting yourself up for success. And then, of course, the step three last week, we invited you to go get yourself ready for this big fat experiment by conducting your own recipe search, okay? And so we invited you to just use the interweb and find 6 recipes. So anything with like 4 servings each. And we invited you to find, you know, 2 breakfasts, 2 lunch, 2 dinner. that align with foods that make you feel good, the kinds of things that you discover on your cooking audit. But this also gives you the ability to kind of open your eyes to some new horizons, right? Find things that you didn't know you already like. And then also you want to just make sure that you have the equipment that you need for those recipes. So if it says that you need a double boiler or whatever it is, make sure that you have that, right? But also you might want to use what you do have as a tool to determine which recipe works for you, because you might say, you know what, I really want that recipe, but I don't want to go buy a bunch of stuff for my kitchen. So again, we want to work with you and what makes you feel good and doesn't stress you out. And then just like in the membership site, they're there right there right now. But we gave you some resources with which to do that and to figure out the recipes that work for you. Okay. And so now I'm going to turn it over to Laura Lee, because we are going to, it's now your turn. Okay. It's time for us to start walking you through your big fat experiment. And just like we mentioned before, the hard part is already done for you. So this is going to feel like a breeze, because the mindset of who you are being as a stressless cook has already been created for you, it just by following the processes that we've laid out for you. Now, one last thing I want to say before I turn it over to Laura Lee is that everything that we've laid out for you before, it doesn't mean, if you haven't done it, it doesn't mean like stop watching this video and go do it now. But I invite you, do not rush into the big fat experiment until you've gone back through weeks 1, 2, and 3. This is a process. It's a learning process. We are rewiring your brain and retraining your thinking around cooking and who you're being as a chef and a cook. And so again, the big fat experiment, if you throw it into a mix of your old beliefs and your old mindsets, and you haven't made the 5 shifts and you haven't really audited who you want to be and how you want to feel and taking yourself through these processes, this is just going to be a big fat experiment that's going to end up being like the last time you cooked and thought it was a failure. A big fat flop. Exactly. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Laura Lee.
Thank you, Leanne. I'm sad that we've come to the last module together, but that just means there's new exciting things for us to do together.
Absolutely.
Okay, guys, as Leanne said, the only reason you are here is because of all the work you have done. And so you should be very proud of yourself. And again, all of that work is incredibly crucial. So we don't want to just hop on over to here, even though these do look like some really useful tools and tricks. They're only going to be consistent and sustainable if you've done all of the hard work. Okay, so now that you are ready, you've done your search, you have an idea of what you like, you are going to, and you've gone grocery shopping, you are going to prep your recipe. Now, this may sound like a small, simple thing, but it is a game changer. Before you put anything in the refrigerator, you are going to go ahead and prep those veggies and or proteins or, examples of this are you're going to look at that recipe, and if that recipe calls for chopping your bell pepper, you're going to chop that bell pepper and put it in a container and put it in the fridge. If you need to slice your meat up, or you need to marinate it, or you need to tenderize it, you're going to do that, put it in a container, then in the fridge. You need to grate your cheese. If you need to pre-mix some spices, all of that prep from your recipes, you're going to do that before it goes in the fridge, and you will be giving yourself the biggest hug when you go to cook. The next thing is to read your recipes thoroughly twice. Again, I know it sounds like a pain, but it is going to make the actual cooking such a breeze. You're going to feel like a complete pro, because there's so many things. First of all, everybody writes recipes a little bit differently, so you don't want to make any assumptions about how the recipe is going to go. You really need to see how is this person writing. But you also want to take note that most of the time, the recipe is written in conjunction with how the ingredients are listed. So if the onion is listed first, then, it's probably going to be the first thing that's mentioned in the actual recipe itself, but sometimes that's not the case. So again, you don't want to be in the middle of cooking and then realize that you didn't chop your onion and it's time to throw it into the pot. So read your recipes thoroughly twice. And then the third prep step is if a recipe is going to move quickly, even if a recipe, this is something that I'm actually going to be doing for my second cookbook, because I realized that for certain recipes, even though they may be quote properly written, when you have a big pot and it's hot and it's bubbling, and then you need to be throwing in 5 different spices that are listed in your ingredients, let me tell you, if you've gone ahead and pre-measured those spices and put them in a tiny little bowl and all you have to do is throw them into the pot, it's going to make things so much easier, and it's going to help you stick to the cooking timeline. So go ahead and just like take a little gander at the recipe and see what are some things that they don't even ask me to do that I might be able to do in advance if this recipe is kind of going to move fast. The next thing that we are going to do is our big ol' step two. So we've done our prep, and now we are going to create a cooking environment. And by the way, this might come, you know, depending on how you do your prep, when are you putting it in the fridge and then cooking that night? You may be prepping, your environment may be something that you focus on after you've done some of the prep, but it is equally important. And the first part of that is that you fill your pantry with the non-perishables and staples to make your recipes. So you've taken a look at your recipes, you've gone to the grocery store, you've gotten the non-perishables, but you've also made sure that you have the staples. And that's going to be things like rice and canned tomatoes and soy sauce and olive oil and salt and seasonings and all that. You have that so that you're not having to go to the grocery store and get a whole bunch of glass jars and bottles. So you've filled your pantry with non-perishables and the staples for your particular recipes. The next thing is to have a clean kitchen. This is cannot be overstated, that having a clean workspace is absolutely so important. One thing I love to do is if it's the end of the day and I have a messy kitchen and it's bedtime and I'm tired, what I'll do is I'll make myself like a really nice cozy little kind of like latte thing, like a turmeric latte or something. And I'll put on some music and I'll go ahead and just knock out the cleaning and the drying and putting everything away. And, you know, turning on the music and having that little latte to sip on makes it so much more enjoyable. And I am never, it's like a workout. You're never not glad you did it. The next thing is to kick everybody out of the kitchen. Yes, that's right. You can take ownership of the kitchen. This is your space and nobody else's. And if people are starving and they need a snack, well, they need to think about that before, or you can run it out to them, but they can't come in the kitchen. And that is the boundary that you're going to create for yourself so that you have a clear mental, emotional, and physical space. The next thing is to create and put on a playlist, or, you know, just say, Alexa, play reggae music. Not that, you know, I'm really into reggae music or anything. No, I really am. That's my jam right now. You could say, Alexa, you know, play your particular, whatever your favorite band is, or you can put it together and, you know, play the, you know, have a bunch of playlists that you ask for in advance. But having that background noise is so wonderful. Another thing along that lines is if you have a TV in your kitchen, even just a little TV, or you can even set up your phone or your computer and you want to watch the cooking channel, that's always super fun and inspirational. I love doing that as well. And then another thing is, and this is sort of like I was saying with cleaning with my little turmeric latte, make yourself something lovely that you can sip on. Or maybe it's, you know, prepare a little bowl of roasted almonds and you munch on those if you're kind of hungry. And, you know, if you're a wine person and you really enjoy a glass of red wine, like that's totally fine as well. You know, there's no reason that you can't sip on a lovely glass of red wine. Or, you know, one thing I love making right now that it's hot, is I take the juice from 2 lemons and some drops of stevia, some ice and water, and it tastes like lemonade and it's so delicious. So you just prepare something. Also, because cooking is very dehydrating, it's hot. So this is also going to help you understand your hunger cues better when you do go to eat, because a lot of times when we think we're hungry, we're actually just dehydrated. So
I just want to stack on something real quickly. I'm going to actually just go back to the very first step for a second. Notice that with all of this, like the prepping of your recipe and then taking you into step two, which is like really getting your environment set out, right? Like what we're really doing here, ladies, is just making this a pleasant experience by getting your brain online, giving yourself peace of mind, giving yourself ease, giving yourself feasibility, making it simple, making it stressless, making it actually enjoyable, right? Notice that we haven't even really, yes, there's some prep work and all that, but we haven't even gotten into the cooking side of things yet. It's all those things that are going to create an environment for this stressless cooking and you being a stressless cook. It's going to set you up for success. And then you'll notice we're going to get to step three, but that's the simple part. That everything that we're doing is creating this internal and physical environment for you to be this stressless cook. All right, cool.
Awesome. Love it. All the things. Moving on. Step three. Finally, we are here. after so much work and so many weeks, it is time to cook. And this is, you've got this, guys. You've got it. And I'll tell you why. You've got it because, number one, you do not need to be afraid of failure. First of all, actually, this is a helpful tip, is look for a way to compost in your community, because that has been a saving grace for me when I ruin a recipe, which still happens all the time. I burn something, or I just, you know, whatever it is that goes wrong, I throw it in my compost bucket and I feel fantastic because I'm creating beautiful soil and impacting my environment in a positive way. And so actually it was fantastic that I ruined that recipe. So composting can be a great way to not feel like you're, you know, wasting food and to make it a little bit more pleasant when something goes wrong. So don't be afraid of failure. That's part of the deal. It's part of the fun. And again, it's all about your mindset. When I first started writing my first cookbook, I would get so upset when I'd have to throw away a whole batch of it. And then I changed my mindset to, oh my gosh, how fantastic that happened, because I'll never make that mistake again. And I learned something and I'll never forget it. And so now I'm so grateful for those failures and those moments, because they teach me something and it sticks. The next thing is to use your judgment, guys. Like, if you're looking at a recipe and it calls for a tablespoon of salt, maybe you want to like start with half a teaspoon and work your way up. Or if you taste it and you're like, something, feel like it needs something just like fresh, throw some lemon juice in there. Don't be afraid to use all the skills that you've cultivated and however many years of eating food that you've now accumulated. That's going to be really, really helpful in customizing it and making it taste good to you. And then kind of along those lines, taste as you go, also something I cannot overstate. You must taste as you go. Hear me when I say that. Now, quick caveat, obviously make sure all your proteins are cooked. You don't have anything raw in there. But as soon as everything is cooked and sanitary, taste is crucial, because again, that is the way that you're going to make food that you love, that you then want to repeat, because it is totally customized to you. Use a thermometer for meat. This sounds silly, but it's just really, really important, because meat is tricky. It's really easy to overcook it. And especially when you're starting out cooking proteins, having a $9 meat thermometer from Amazon will change the game. And you can also go online to, I believe the FDA has their basic regulations for temperatures. And you can see, like, when I'm cooking pork, what temperature should I be looking for? I cook it to 145. You know, chicken, beef, all of that. And so that can be incredibly helpful. And then the last thing is clean as you go. I actually mentioned this in a Q&A last week, but one of the things I love to do is to take a big mixing bowl and put a small trash bag in it on the counter as I'm cooking, and throw in any trash that I make as I go. And it saves me from just walking over to the trash can, which sounds really silly, but it will make it faster and easier for you to clean. And, you know, especially as you start to make these recipes over and over again, you will be surprised at how much time there is in a given recipe to clean as you go. There's usually, even if it's 2 minutes, to just wash the dishes that you've thrown in the sink or dry what's already been cleaned. There is nothing better than sitting down to eat and having a clean kitchen already.
Awesome. So as you can see, this big fat experiment that you're going on, it's pretty simple, and it's just a taste. It's like a case study. You're taking like a week, you know, you're figuring out, like, am I doing big batch? Am I doing convenience? Am I Taco Tuesday? Am I a science? Am I an artist? All of that, right? You're figuring out what personality you're going to like kind of use, right? Or maybe it's a multiple. You've got some recipes that, again, you're just trying on. You're not committing to perfectionism. You're committing to experimentation. And then you're just going through the prep, the environmental, and then the actual cooking experiment. It's a very simple thing that, again, if you bring the stress and the worry and the perfectionism with you, it will show up in this experience. If you bring the stresslessness, if you bring the permission, the fun, the ease, the just like experiment mentality with you, you'll bring that with you. Okay. So just keep that in mind. It's a very simple process, but who you're being when you do the doing is the most important part of it. Okay. So now you're going to take some time, you're going to do this experiment, and then what's going to happen afterwards is almost just as important as what happens during, okay? And so the post-experiment steps, remember, we want to turn you into a stressless cook. And so every time you take yourself through this process, it's going to become I can say it a couple of different ways, more and more stressless or less and less stressful, right? That's the goal here. So that then it just becomes second nature to you. But just like anything, it takes practice, it takes experimentation, and it's not always going to happen on the very first experiment, right? So here's what we want to do after you've taken yourself through steps 1 through 3. So first, like, just assess, like, is there something you didn't love about your recipes? Now you have the tools. Maybe it's just a matter of, like, it's a great recipe. You just need to tweak it for next time or add a little bit of this or take away a little bit of that to make yourself enjoy it even better and to feel better when you're doing it, right? She's never hurt, Laura Lee said, when in doubt. Awesome. My thing is, like, bacon never hurts.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Totally. Wow, cheese and bacon together. Double whammy. Yeah, exactly. And then now you can see, again, like, coming back to those 5 shifts that we talked about in the beginning of this course, you know, really now going through the experiment, they might feel like, you might feel connected to the shifts when you go through them, but now you've actually experienced them, you might actually want to go through the modules again. And now that you've gone through the experiment, this is a wash, rinse, and repeat system of tools each time. The cooking personality grows and evolves as you do, or changes with the seasons in your life. The stressless cooking audit is always going to be relevant to your life. Those 5 shifts are always going to set you up for freedom, okay? So keep that in mind. But then we also provide a tool for you, just like you do for your other big fat experiments that we're doing. We're giving you an experiment diagnosis, which is going to be below this video in the membership site. But what you want to do is you want to identify what worked. Then you want to identify what didn't work. And then you want to identify how to actually improve it and make the next experiment even better and commit to another experiment, right? Commit to, okay, that was just round 1. Let me see how I can make the next round even better. That's really the experiment mentality at play, okay? So again, just to kind of recap, we've taken you through all the kind of pre-experiment stuff, including, you know, the audit, your cooking personality, and of course those 5 shifts, that the kind of mindset shifts that we took you through back in week 1. So we're really getting you in the right frame of mind. Back to the first step of this experiment is really just prepping your recipes so that you're set up for success and the actual cooking side of things is simple and stressless. The second part is creating this really beautiful ambiance and a good environment and getting yourself in your peak state. So that might mean using music, a clean kitchen, whatever tools, maybe it's a non-alcoholic or an alcoholic beverage, whatever it is, it's always a matter of who you're being when you're doing it, right? And so getting your environment intact. And then the cooking part is just the cooking part. But again, Laura Lee gave you those guidelines so that you're not bringing, you know, perfectionism into it, that you're figuring things out as you go, you're learning as you go. So you're also setting yourself up for an easy after process by cleaning as you go, okay? And then, of course, the post-experiment steps, all right? So really, that is it, ladies. That is stressless cooking. I know it might seem a little bit oversimplified, but that's what we wanted for you. We wanted to show you how to totally remove the stress, the emotion, and the obsession out of cooking and make it super, super simple. So that is what we did for you, okay? So do not hesitate to go through these modules again. They're short but sweet. Do not hesitate to reach out for help and if you have any questions whatsoever. And just real quickly, I wanna make sure, see if you have any questions, feel free, you can either unmute yourself or type into the chat and we'll make sure that we answer any questions before we get off. And if you don't have questions now, I know a lot of this is pretty simple and pretty self-explanatory, but don't hesitate to reach out through the help desk if you have any questions off the back of this whatsoever. Just want to give you one more opportunity. Just feel free to type into the chat or unmute yourself. There is no question that is too small. There's no such thing as stupid or silly questions. We are here to serve you.
Hi, it's Suzanne. I just wanted to thank you for doing this session. I know that I have definitely been in my head about cooking, and part of what I uncovered in thinking about resistance to this was, you know, part of this fear started when I was just graduated college and money was so tight that if I messed something up, I was, you know, completely screwing up my budget. And it was helpful to kind of talk myself through, that's not who I am anymore, and that's not my station in life anymore, and that it is okay to make something and to for it to be, you know, a bit of a catastrophe and to not like it. It doesn't mean that I am so financially strapped that I can't find something else for dinner for that day.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, first of all, I'm so glad that you brought up this topic. You know, there's a couple things to say about it. You're right. Like, it is straight up a mindset. Like, we have this mindset that, you know, cooking healthy food is expensive. And we hit that in week one where it's like, actually going out to eat is a lot more expensive. But there is that like money factor that people come to. And so I love that you brought this up. And I'd actually like to use it as an opportunity. I want to share some of my favorite ways that I save money. And then I know Laura Lee has her own, because that's a big part of the reason that I do prep a lot of my food is like, I just want to be really mindful with how I'm spending money and not be so wasteful with my funds. Mm-hmm. And so one of the ways that I actually like save a lot of money at the grocery store is, well, all of you probably know that I'm a big proponent of Costco. A lot of people, and Sam's is the same, but I belong to Costco. So if you have a Costco in your area, there a lot of people think like, oh, I can't shop at Costco because everything's in bulk. That's not actually true. They have a lot of just like normal sized things. But like I get spinach there. I get my bell peppers there. I get my avocados there. I get my meat there. I get any fruits and nuts and nut butters and oils and salts and peppers and all of that there. Cause it is so, first of all, they provide really high quality and like all their meat, like they have regular meats, but they also have ones that are like, you know, nitrate free and antibiotics free and all that. So you want to look at the packaging and all that, but it is a great way where I save money. And you can eat some stuff. If it is too much, you can just put it in the freezer. So that's one way where I save a ton of money by like getting stuff there. But also one of the underrated places that they're popping up all over the place now is Aldi. Aldi is so good for fruits and vegetables, and they are doing a really big push on their own like stocking of organic fruits and vegetables as well. So Aldi, I never really went in there because my mom used to be like, oh, I hate Aldi. It's such a bad experience. And I'm like, yeah, I get it. If you're not, like, it's not a typical grocery store. It's a totally different experience. Like, you have to bring your own bag or buy your own bag or, you know, pay for your card or whatever. But it is such a great place to just save money on fruits and vegetables and a great excuse buster if you think that it's expensive. And I know, Laura Lee, you have a few of your own topics as well. So.
And so what I also wanted to say is if some of the concern is coming from messing up a recipe and burning something, making it to the point where it's inedible, start with some plant-based recipes because those are just less expensive. Start with recipes that are grain-based, you know, quinoa, rice, whatever it is. You know, you can get those in bulk for very, very little, and just start with some, you know, some grain bowls and salads and those kinds of things, rice and beans, really focus on rice and bean type based dishes. You're going to feel a lot better about potentially messing that up. if for some reason it goes awry, then in terms of saving money, yes, Costco and Aldi are absolutely incredible. Those are great resources. And then just some basics, shop seasonally. Seasonal things are going to be less expensive. If you're not sure what's seasonal, honestly, if you just Google what's seasonal and you know, wherever you are, you will find a lot of resources for that. And those are going to be less expensive. Take the time to see what sales are going on at your local grocery store. You know, it takes just a very few minutes and it can save you a lot of money. Make sure that you're signed up for any kind of rewards programs that they have. I've saved so much money at Kroger. And then as Leanne said, prepping is huge for saving money. I would, as Leanne says, I would invite you to take a look at your freezer before maybe even before you start really getting into cooking on a consistent basis, and clear out as much of your freezer as you can. Put things in individual pint containers. You can order them on Amazon in bulk, and you can label them with, you can get a label maker, just pieces of paper that you stick on there with a sharp, write in Sharpie what it is. And putting things in the freezer and actually utilizing your freezer properly. Most of us either don't use our freezer or we use it as a dumping ground for leftovers. If you give your freezer a little bit of TLC, it can save you an enormous amount of money. But do not think that if you put it in the freezer, that you're going to remember what it is that you put in there, because nothing looks the same once it's been frozen for a few days. So you must label it. But yeah, those are just some little tips. Awesome.
I have another question, because I definitely recognize that I am probably not your Taco Tuesday cook, but a bulk cook. But I am a single person. So I think one of my conundrums is how to bulk cook for one without getting completely tired of whatever it is that I'm going to make.
So what I would say to that, because, you know, I have a boyfriend, but honestly, we both work so much. We don't live together. So I am in many ways a single one-person cook. And what I do is I use my own little tagline, which is the magic is in the sauces and the condiments. So what I do is I make a batch of roasted vegetables. I make a batch of quinoa. I prep some chicken breast, and I keep those really simple. So I have my little foundational elements, and then the magic comes from and these can all be store-bought. They don't need to be homemade. Get yourself a yummy salsa, a yummy pesto, some toasted sesame oil, some nuts and seeds, and some dried fruit that you can keep in the pantry, and you can create totally different flavored meals while the base is still the same. So one day you put cheese and salsa on it, and you have and you know, maybe you have a little bit of hot sauce and your red pepper flakes in your pantry, and you have kind of a Mexican theme. The next day you could add, you know, keep some sesame seeds around. Those will last for months and months and months, and you can add them with some toasted sesame oil and, you know, some avocado, and you have kind of an Asian theme. And then the next day you could, you know, decide you want to go Mediterranean. So, you know, maybe you have hummus, or you know, just some tahini mixed with lemon juice and some olives, and you have more of a Mediterranean theme, and it's going to feel like a brand new fresh meal.
That's a great idea.
And I love that these questions are coming up. One of the things that I'll just kind of stack on that too is, like, you know, I might have like some chicken pre-cooked in my fridge, and one day I toss it in with, like, I put together an awesome salad with spinach and beets and artichoke hearts and peppers and, you know, avocado and all that stuff. And the next day I heat up some cauliflower rice that I also get at Costco, and I mix in some avocado mash in there, and I throw the chicken on top. Or some days I'll throw that chicken on a pot with some broccoli, or in a pan with some broccoli, and I'll make an omelet out of it. So that's the same chicken that's in my fridge, but three different ways that I can literally concoct something with it very, very quickly. And then one other thing that I'll say, that if for some reason you're like, but that's, you know, I might get bored and I might want to, you know, try something that's a little bit more fun. Like maybe you want to, you know, do a roast of some kind, or maybe you want to make a big, you know, fancy, whatever it is, pasta dish, or anything that seems like it's just too elaborate for one person, that is again where your freezer is going to come in handy. Make yourself that big, beautiful roast, cut yourself the slice, enjoy it, and then freeze those leftovers in individual pint containers, and maybe once a week, for the next 6 weeks, you have a beautiful roast dinner all to yourself, and you didn't have to worry about any of the leftovers, and it feels special.
Also a great suggestion. Thank you.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And I know you didn't ask some of those questions, so thank you for just sharing your awarenesses, because that yielded us to even broach that subject, which is so helpful for everybody else listening. So I'm so glad that you had those awarenesses. And you're right. Like, most people that are here right now, they don't have a cooking problem. Like, there's some logistical tweaks to figure out, but most people, just like you shared with yours, like, had a mindset around cooking problem and had some stories that weren't serving them. And so I'm so grateful that you were able to kind of unpeel those for yourself and figure out what they are and what they aren't.
Well, and here at Laurely, I think your advice to read the recipe twice before you start is probably the smartest change I can make, because I can't tell you how many times I'll be distracted or partway through and not know what the roadmap is going to look like. And yeah, that is an easy thing to do for myself that I can't believe I haven't thought, like, well, duh, let's read through it and know what you're going to do before you actually start.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, first of all, it's not a duh, because I think it's only natural that people approach recipe writing like you approach reading a book, which is like you just read it from start to finish. But they're actually different. So it's not super obvious, but it is such a game changer. And the truth is, most recipes are not written to be read through as you go. They're written to be read as preparation to sort of get the big picture. So I'm really glad that was helpful for you.
Definitely was. Thank you.
Of course, my pleasure.
Awesome. And just to kind of stack on that, like, I mean, everything that we've shared in Stressless Cooking, it's those simple little things. Like you said, it's such a duh, you know, but it really is. Like, we're just making it so simple and taking some of the ordinary things that might be such extraordinary changes in how you're approaching your relationship with food, your relationship with cooking, your relationship with your kitchen, all that. So it's, you know, I hope you all have some more duh moments, because it really can be that simple. You know what I mean?
One of my other awarenesses that I'll share was how frustrated I get when my screen goes dark if I'm looking at a recipe online. So another kind of like personal duh was print it out.
Mm-hmm.
Just print it. Like, stop fighting with this screen.
Absolutely. Isn't that funny? But you know what's funny is, I think had you not been approaching all of cooking from a completely new perspective, you wouldn't have thought of that. But because you were sort of looking at it with a fresh, you know, fresh set of goggles, that was something that came to your mind. But it's totally normal and human to just keep doing the same thing over and over again, you know, Einstein's definition of insanity. But that's also a game changer. And it's a little thing, but the quality of the experience becomes, you know, 1,000 times better, and then you want to do it. So that's so awesome. I love that duh moment.
Absolutely. And this is just like with everything, it's all about energy. Like, what energy are you bringing to it, but also what's robbing you of energy? And that little screen flubber, like mishap, you know, flubber.
Well, it always seems to happen when your hands are dirty. So then it's you can't just click on it, because then you have a whole hand washing that has to happen before it.
I totally get it. Absolutely. Absolutely. So I'm glad that you brought it up, because I'm sure it comes up for other people too. You know, these are the little things. And if it's not a screen for you, it's like, what's robbing you of energy from cooking? And let's just squash it. Let's just address it. Let's just make it a non-issue. So I love your questions. I love your awarenesses. Thanks for sharing that with all of us. It's such a gift to all of us.
So the last thing I want to say is, another thing that's super helpful is a cookbook stand. You can order them for like nothing on Amazon, but a cookbook stand is super, super helpful. If for some reason your book isn't naturally flat lay, which means it's going to flop back closed, just, you know, put a little pressure on it, kind of break down some of that binding, and having the cookbook stand where you can face the recipe is really helpful.
Awesome. Beautiful. Cool. Well, thank you all so much for joining us for Stressless Cooking. If you all have any other questions, do not hesitate to reach out in the help desk, and we will make sure that you get your questions answered. There is no question too small. No such thing as stupid or silly questions. We are here to serve you. And the last thing we just want to say is, like, just, you get to determine what your relationship is with food. You get to determine what your relationship is with your kitchen. You get to determine who you want to be as a cook. If you want to be a Big Batch Tuesday scientist, Taco Tuesday concoctor, all of it. Exactly. You get to choose. This is about you taking control of your life through the tools that you're learning, or as Laura Lee would say, by taking control of your kitchen. Cool. Anything you want to stack on that, Laura Lee?
No, honestly, I think that's it. And I'm so proud of you guys, and I'm so grateful for your time. And, you know, I hope to stay in touch.
Awesome. This will serve you for a long time, ladies. It can serve you for the rest of your life. Again, taking the time, the short-term investment right now, to become a stressless cook so that you have it for the rest of your life. All right. So this is us signing out. Do not hesitate to reach out in the help desk if we can serve you in any way. And it has been a pleasure, ladies. Have a good one.
Thank you.